15 years after our interview on the old screensavers. That's pretty funny.
Bringing it back.
You were at the time, you were still probably at Napster, I would guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I remember what a thing Napster was. I still probably have, I don't know, 30 or 40 gigabytes of music that I downloaded from Napster at the time.
I never downloaded anything or did anything illegal.
Never did anything illegal. Of course not. And nor did I, or because I then bought all those songs later or something.
Truth was, I would have paid.
I would. That solution, was the problem. Yeah, there wasn't a way to do it that was legal. So
I pay now.
And I have to say, in defense of Napster, I don't think I'm alone. It brought me back to music.
Yes.
I was able to find songs I couldn't find any other way, a record store or any other way, that I remembered and knew songs. And since then, I've paid more, bought more music than ever before, thanks to Napster. And I think that's really
often... It's a discovery tool.
It's a discovery tool.
Yeah.
And I think it's often the case that, the movie industry got all upset about VCRs until they made billions on video rentals. The music industry probably underestimated the value of Napster. Their business was going to change anyway. They just didn't want to go. They went kicking and screaming.
Well, it's like every revolution. Every single revolution. What happens at the end?
Right.
They march the rebel leaders up against a wall.
Right.
They shoot them.
Yeah.
And then the equivalent of Apple comes in.
Right.
And builds an actual business.
Right.
There's
a real
it.
Business. Yeah, suddenly, wow, amazing. iTunes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after, did you stay, how long did you stay with Napster? Did you stay through the end?
No. The question is, when did the end start and when did the end actually end? Because there were several times we got stomped by the federal government. So I stayed through the first two stompings and then I left. It was...
Stomp me once, shame on you. Stomp me twice,
shame on me. Yeah. It was a miserable experience, that part of, to have built and ridden along with something so great and something so impactful, and then have to turn it off and then have to turn it back on and then have to turn it off again. And for me, I think that combined with, the increasing gap between management's understanding of what made the organization tick and what it actually was that made it operate, is just too much for me. And it was time for me to move on. So I stayed like first year and 6 months, year and change, the formative years.
But boy,
but it
an
went
interesting
on.
Time.
It kept going
on. Oh, yeah,
on.
It's still around.
I resigned.
The name exists.
The day Bertelsmann made their $60 million investment.
Really?
That was the day.
That was the day. That was when it was over. I mean, Bertelsmann, one of the big three record.
Well, so some people have strong Napster experiences who started after
that point. Right.
And who am I to invalidate that, right?
But the culture, this is...
Yes.
And in a way, this was kind of, I think, the end of this magical time in general, you think?
It had ended maybe a little sooner.
When the big companies come in, the big money comes in...
I'm not anti-big money and I'm not anti-big companies, but I am anti-jerks and I am anti-idiots.
Okay.
And I think it was the descending of those types that didn't understand, that could not fully understand what would make that business successful. Just objectively, we hired a lawyer as a CEO, and lawyers are not known as risk-taking people. Yeah. And if you're in a startup, we know now, if you're trying to break new ground, you have to naturally be a risk taker.
Right.
A thoughtful risk taker, but a risk taker.
Yeah.
And so there are just these easy sort of things you can look back in hindsight and go, that was not a good choice. That was not a good choice. Yeah. That was missing.
But that's how you learn.
That's how new neural pathways get built. Yep.
And so you took lessons from this and you went on to found more companies.
Yep.
What do you think are the important lessons that you took?
Well, one of the most important ones to this day is the importance of culture and the importance of value. So I have I've built up a bunch of aphorisms over the years, but the one that applies here is the most important asset you build in any startup is not the product, it's not the business, it's not the technology, it's not the opportunity, it's the group, it's the team. They are the most important asset. A great team, not a good team, but a great team can take a mediocre idea and turn it into something.
Interesting.
But a average team, a dysfunctional team, will take the next Facebook and F it up 100% of the time.
Wow.
100% of the time. It's always about the people. And there is no schema, there's no process, there's no org structure that defines great people. It's the people that define great people, and you build that process around them. So the focus has to be in the early stages. Of course, you're trying to build a business. Of course, you have goals and objectives that you have to pursue towards, but it's the great team that will get you there. And so that really, you know, looking back on what made WooWoo successful, what made Napster a really, why we were able to do what we were able to do in the face of so much, what made CloudMark successful, especially in the first 5 years, what made all my subsequent companies, including now Atlas, in this last year, so much radical stuff has been done. And it's just amazing. It all comes from this careful, thoughtful attention. You know, first, which was accidental, we accidentally were a great WooWoo group. And
right.
We were a slightly more intentionally great group at CloudMark and so on. Totally accidental at Napster. But having learned from all that and going, oh, okay, you know, this is, why is it the most important asset? It's the great team that's going to figure the crazy stuff out. You will never get it right the first time, what the business should be, what the product should be, what the right features will be. And it's the great team that will evolve through those the most effectively and most efficiently. And why do we have a late stage, you know, a revenue stage innovation problem in all of technology industry? It's because the priorities change.
Right.
Used to be risky innovation hunting around in the dark.
Yep.
Now it's stability and scale, kind of the antithesis of those things. And that original team that created that business disintegrates.
You can see that over and over again.
You lose them 100% of the time.
How do you build a great team, though?
Ah. So, this I keep getting encouraged to...
Yeah, you got
to
write that book.
Write it down.
Yep.
We've been writing blog posts and syndicating some stuff around that. But I think it starts with all culture flows from the top. It doesn't matter what's written on a wall. It doesn't matter what's in the manual. It doesn't matter what the co-founder standing next to the CEO thinks. It doesn't matter what the culture committee thinks. It's the true values that the leader abides by are the ones that the organization will follow. Being distinct and honest about what those values are. So, you know, there are multiple combinations of values that work in the world and in our societal norms. Like, there isn't just one set of what a good person is. There are many dimensions to that, and all of those aren't necessary to build a great kernel of a culture. But being deliberate about what they are, and then being deliberate about hiring for them. So I think 99.
Give me an example. What are you hiring for?
Well, you look at our values: adaptability, craftsmanship, obsession. I once had passion as a value in a prior company, and passion is impossible to measure.
But obsession is good.
Obsession is wonderful.
Yeah.
Was Bill Gates passionate or obsessive?
Right.
Was Steve Jobs passionate or obsessive? Larry Ellison? Like, it's obsession that is the rocket fuel.
That's a better word, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Values like that, bias towards action, you know, these are things that, first of all, as words that we choose to define culture, very important to be specific about which words, how you pick those words. So here's how I think about culture. So here's how we do it at Atlas. Culture is made up of three core parts. The first is values, something very specific. They're words that can be used to evaluate, assess, praise, and critique. If you pick a word that you can't use to evaluate, assess, praise, and critique, in our definition, it's not a good word, it's a value.
Okay.
Right, so that's why passion, I don't think, is a great value. Yeah. You can say you value it as a verb, but it is not a value.
Yeah.
Right, different.
You can't measure. You can't measure it.
Right. You can't say good job or bad job without destroying somebody over it,
right,
or it having some meaning. Then it's not a good value. So we have values. That's one third of it. We have what we call ethos. These are these aphorismic phrases that also define our culture, but they're not evaluation, assessment, praise, and critique words. They're phrases like "sooner is better, now is best." Phrases like "clean hands make you wrong."
What does that mean?
Get them dirty. If you don't know, if you're a real white hat and you don't know what you're talking about, you're wrong. Exactly. And so we have those phrases that represent our ethos.
Yeah.
And they're great things to remind us, inspire us, but we're not measuring against them necessarily. And then the third bucket is traits. So sometimes you'll see someone put in self-reliance as a value. But how do you really measure that? And that isn't an ethos statement, but it is something that you look for in people.
Right.
It's an attribute of what you think it means to be successful within our company. So collectively, that is our DNA. or the Atlas DNA is that's how, after having done it so many times, that's the latest schema that we use. And how we arrive at the values is actually going to be the subject of a really lengthy blog post, because I've done it a bunch of times. We did a mid-flight values process at Cloudmark. So we were already a company of 50 or some odd people with like 7 executives. And then we did the values exercise. And I think the lesson there was we had already fractured as a culture.
Right.
And
you had to do it.
We had to do it. But what it elucidated was we already had more than one culture.
Yeah.
It was too late.
Interesting.
It was helpful as an exercise, but it was too late to really define it to make sure that it could endure.
Yeah, yeah.
There were too many different perspectives.
You have to do it early. Do it at the beginning.
You have to, well, if you're good at it, if you have that, you can define it at the beginning. And it's a thing that gets revisited. So we recently revisited ours after 3 years.
Right.
Because everything we do, and another piece of advice is, process and structure and schema is there to serve us. We are not there to serve it. It is the thing that adapts and changes to us. And so societies change, norms change, cultures change, everything changes, and you have to build in these intervals to reassess and evolve and grow and adapt things that you've defined early on. But yes, the truth is when you go hire people, you are actually going to hire for values. You might not be deliberate about it, but there's something in your gut that's going to go, yep, this feels right, or something doesn't feel right. And implicit in there is sort of this assessment of, does this person believe in what I believe in? That's where what the difference is between good teams and great teams is shared values, shared mindset, shared ethos, shared attributes. That is fundamentally the difference. And so one of the things I like to talk about a lot is the way we do recruiting 99% of the time is completely broken. It's completely broken, right? We break it up into three categories: culture, capacity, and craft. It's the three C's. Culture, all the things I just talked about. Capacity for mastery is about your ability. Google sometimes calls it velocity of learning, but it's this notion that in a startup you're only ever doing new things. If you're doing a good one, like you're only walking into undiscovered country. So your ability to adapt and ingress something mm-hmm. new and master it is much more important than the skills or the craft that right. you bring to the table.
Right.
It's important, but it's third. With the first two, you can get the third.
Yes.
But 99% of interviewing is all about the third.
Yes.
We have a job description and need, want, nice to have. Then we compute. Yes, yes, no, yes, no, yes, yes. 80%, great, let's hire this person. And that has nothing to do with building a great team whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the
Don't hire for skills, hire for the ability.
Culture and capacity.
Yeah, capacity.
Yeah, that's what we call it. But there's, and I learned that in Cloudmark.
Yeah.
I learned the capacity for mastery thing at Cloudmark. There was this one guy who's a phenomenal guy. I'm not going to embarrass him, but he's awesome. And we had just finished a very clever one-hour interview. I have this circular link list question that I ask in 4 different ways and, you know, teaches me a lot of how you think. But I was, you know, he was okay. He was an average guy. By the end of the interview, I was unimpressed, and we had like 10 minutes left. And so I just was like, okay, so what else do you do in your spare time? And then he stopped. The whole room changed. He's like, let me tell you about brewing beer. And then he launched into the thing that he built in his garage. Yeah. And then he's launched into, and I like this kind and this kind. If you use this kind of hops, but you let it sit for this long instead of this long, what they usually tell you is to do it this way. But I've learned if you do it this way, you get a whole different flavor. And if you bottle it and you let it sit in the sun for, you know, an extra day before you do this, like this was an engineering mindset. He may not have been the greatest engineer, but he had such a strong capacity to master the details of things. That was that thing in play.
Isn't that great? You saw that capacity.
Yes.
Didn't matter what the skill set was at that point.
He will figure it out.
He'll figure it out.
Because he has it. And it was a profound moment for me.